Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song, or the fragrance for men.
You may well wonder, what on earth are we doing featuring C.P. Grogan, the pixie from Scotland, dancing around singing Happy Birthday at the start of Fly Me to the Moon? Well, it's because it's Fly Me to the Moon's birthday. 35 years, 35 English years, this tremendous magazine has been, this award-winning magazine has been producing, and indeed, in the words of Rob Nichols, home computers, laptops, internet, iPhones, Zoom, a whole different ballpark now to 1988. Thomas Bartley wasn't even born in 1988. So, Thomas, this is a whole new world for you, really.
True. Yeah. It was interesting what Rob was saying in his editorial about sort of the positive things that have changed, but also the negative things that have changed. When you think about the match day experience, some of the places, you know, fans might have stopped by on the way to Ayresome Park back in 1988, many of them not there anymore. But yeah, certainly a lot's changed in that time.
Yeah, we're not going to get political, but I must admit, when you actually go down Linthorpe Road these days, it seems to be not only a kind of curse on any motorists who happen to be driving in any way, shape or form, but also in terms of obviously an awful lot of, shops that are no longer there. Marks and Spencers, for instance, you know, they might be opening up seven new stores in different parts of the country, but gone from Middlesbrough, and, you know, that's a whole new world. But let's not get political. Sean Rae, Fly Me to the Moon, of course. Again, Rob waxing lyrical there in his editorial for this particular edition. Do you think we can turn the corner? Do you think it's a case that we need to go back to come forward again?
Yeah, I think so. I think the good thing about Michael Carrick, he keeps us very grounded all the time, and his demeanour is always the same, and it doesn't matter who we're facing, whether it's Leicester or a team that are not performing, as well. I think his ethos is that if the group stay calm and keep delivering on what they want them to do each week, they'll find some sort of consistency over the season and find their level.
Michael Carrick for Mayor of Middlesbrough. That's the campaign we need to look for. And Chris Bartley, presumably, maybe like Rob Nichols and myself, possibly not Sean, but you remember visiting the ABC cinema that seems to be sort of just looking so forlorn now. And now, of course, referred to as the Crown on Linthorpe Road again. We're sort of waxing lyrical. That's another a big change from times past, really. I remember seeing E.T., the extraterrestrial there. But there we are. That's another line. Oh, Rob, we could wax so lyrical, but we've wished happy birthday already to Fly Me to the Moon. 35 Middlesbrough-based years and still going. So congratulations.
Well, we've got to be thankful to Thomas and Chris for doing the research and finding out because I'd totally forgotten.
You're too close to the action, too close to the whole system. It's important for the. Okay, this is Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast companion for Leicester City, of course, unashamedly Borough biased. Let's move with our usual retro routine. Sean, kind of a bit of a mixed bag, really. I mean, great to be Exeter City, obviously. Great to be drawn against Port Vale. I was speaking to one of my students literally yesterday, and he's looking forward to a Newcastle Middlesbrough final. There's a little line there. Obviously, Newcastle are not going to have any problems with Chelsea whatsoever, but still, there you go. I mean, any thoughts in terms of obviously the cup runners there? We had the slight sort of hiccup with respect to Stoke City, and arguably Plymouth Argyle gave us one or two shocks.
Yeah, I think with regards to the cup, I do think it's great to have a cup run, and there's so many narratives left in that last eight, potentially moving forward. Obviously, you've got the Newcastle potential encounter, but you've also got Chelsea. It would be lovely to give a good hiding, given what they've done to us over the years, and obviously you've got the West Ham narrative with Michael Carrick as well. So I think it's great that that's running parallel to the league games. It looked a little bit like it was the first time Carrick looked a little bit frustrated after a game. He's normally very sort of pragmatic and even-tempered. And I'm not saying he lost his cool by any stretch, but he did wear the frustration a little bit. It seemed like an opportunity lost having got back in front, I think.
Stanley Stan, of course, so the post-Afghan tales and the League Cup scenario. Do you ever ask yourself, how did I get here? Well, actually, Talking Heads, I think, put that question back in the day. How did I get here? But never mind. It's the David Byrne number. Rob probably remembers that. In fact, you may have done a cover version of Once in a Lifetime, Rob. Just saying. No. Okay. A question that obviously Stanley Stan asking, he suggests Barrow fans are asking relating to the League Cup. Yeah, I mean, It's a quarter final. It's against Port Vale. I mean, this has got to. I mean, look, Robbie Williams is already going through the male menopause. He's already said that. He's gone on record as saying that. I mean, surely there's nothing to beat, is there?
There's always something to beat. And we know the lessons of when Tony Pulis's time when we when Burton Albion we got in a quarter final. So it was on a plate for us to play a certain team called Manchester City in the semi-final. That didn't go too well for Burton, but it didn't go too well for us in the game against Burton, getting beaten at the Riverside. So you never count any chickens, do you? But it's been a really good cup run. It's been a bizarre cup run, hasn't it? Because after playing Huddersfield, we've been playing teams below us in the pyramids, and being able to bring in. We've been talking about these games because we've been able to bring in squad players and young players that have joined us in the summer, and it's given them a chance to sort of get themselves established as part of Borough. And in the Exeter game, it was tremendous goals from Morgan Rogers and Sammy Silvera, and
Morgan
obviously
Rogers, who of course came to Middlesbrough from which particular club?
Manchester City.
Just wanted to say that one. Just want to get that
Yeah,
one
yeah.
there.
But he was getting lots of stick. From the Borough fans at Exeter in the first half, but in the second half, his performance was so outstanding that everyone was calling for him to be playing at Plymouth. So it's been a brilliant opportunity in that way. But at the same time, we put in some great performances. And you're talking about Michael Carrick's frustration. Well, Sean was talking about his frustrations at Plymouth, and I think we didn't we. we had a lot of opportunities both times when we were in the lead in that match. We had a lot of opportunities to seal it really with a second another goal to go two goals clear. But when you look at it afterwards, one of the things he was annoyed about was Isaiah Jones was chopped down when sprinting into the box right on the edge of the area, and it did seem really, really, really odd that there was not a red card, which because all day it was a red car offence, and that would have made a big difference, I think.
Well, maybe one day VAR will emerge in these cup competitions as well, but I think there are certain issues that certain clubs are having with VAR. Maybe, you know, even Newcastle United might be sort of saying that they can benefit or not, as the case may be. So it goes. Chris, in terms of the cup run, are you hopeful, cautiously optimistic? Do you think that, you know, as we head through the next phase, we'll talk Leicester City obviously in a few moments, that this is actually a good thing, or is it just a case of, again, you know, it's another kind of thing to be taken in its stride?
I think
you're a little bit off microphone there, Chris, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry. I know Rob referred to when we got beat against Burton, and obviously Man City, I think on the aggregate score was pretty heavily loaded in favour of Man City.
4-1, I think you'll find.
I think they scored eight.
Oh,
yeah,
there
I think it was eight, yeah. Yeah, I think it was eight. So you just don't know who you might be pitted against. And sometimes, depending on the commitments that they've got in other competitions or what's coming up the league, they might possibly rotate the squad. So I think it's a positive thing. And I always think that when you've got like sometimes, obviously we've got an FA Cup third round draw to come as well, you always kind of really look forward to January if you've got the possibility of a Carabao Cup semi-final and maybe a nice FA Cup. And it just makes you really look into the new year with a lot of kind of renewed optimism, I think.
Yeah, when it comes to the FA Cup, I'd like to give a special mention for a team I'd love to see play Middlesbrough, Cray Valley PM, Cray Valley Paper Mills. Got a very brave 1-1 draw with Charlton Athletic, and I think it'd be nice to actually see Cray Valley Paper Mills at the Riverside. I'm just saying. I know there's a step to go. They've got to beat Gillingham before then, and obviously beat the replay, but that's a different line from that sort of second or third team. Rob, Don Revie, of course, known for the Revie plan when he was actually at Manchester City. Sorry, third plug there. I'll refrain from actually other sort of lines in terms of that. But I do recall, if memory serves, we once had a little wander around the sort of haunts of Don Revie and Brian Clough, and we had the sort of general guided tour in terms of where they were born back in the day.
That's right, we did with Roger Hermiston, the author of Clough and Revie, in which he talks about a third character in that book is Middlesbrough, isn't it? And yes, that was really good. So we walked from Valley Road, where there's a green plaque marking Brian Clough's house, and then we walked through the park past the Clough Memorial, and then up past Ayrton Park to Don Revie's house. So of course, Ayrton Park, somewhere that Don Revie used to visit as a kid. You can see it. You can get a YouTube clip that I listened to this week where he talks about how they were his heroes, and he must have been almost able to hear them from his house, because he lived in Bell Street, which is and his school was Archibald School, which is just on the corner, just opposite Linthorpe Cemetery, and very close to the former Ayrton Park. So yeah, he must have seen the crowds going past on the way to the game, but he never actually played. Unlike Brian Clough, he never actually played for his hometown club because he was whisked away by Leicester City,
is just part of the odyssey. And I do say odyssey that Jimmy Flynn has actually produced in what is clearly an epic 35th anniversary scenario entitled Don Revie. So are we ready, Rob, to actually hopefully do justice to this particular little number?
Are we going to do the whole of it?
I think we have to, really. I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, otherwise, how could we ever expect Sean and Thomas and Chris to actually, you know, maintain the sort of level of seriousness that this thing warrants, basically? So after you, please. Rob.
Okay. It's entitled Don Revie, or Don Revie. A great mystery in the history of Middlesbrough FC is how the club overlooked the talent of a young Don Revie.
A football-obsessed boy, born and raised in the town, who went on to win worldwide football renown.
Born a long goal kick from Boroughs Ayrton Park ground, in the surrounding streets he endlessly kicked a ball around.
From his Archibald School playground, he could plainly see the stadium where he would clearly have loved to be.
In 1930s school's football, his talent clearly shone. Talents which Borough inexplicably failed to act upon.
For Newport Boys Club and Borough Swifts, he went on to play before being allowed to spread his wings and fly away.
At the Foxes of Leicester City's Filbert Street ground, a first professional home for his skills he found.
There he developed a unique style of inside forward play which led to six England caps coming his way.
From Leicester, he moved to Hull City's Booth Ferry Park and provided the Tigers with bite and creative spark.
Manchester City's main road was his third port of call, where he made his greatest playing impact of all.
He swiftly became City's playmaking main man and devised a style of play labelled the Reevey Plan.
As a deep-lying centre-forward, a remarkable double he scored, FA Cup winner and Footballer of the Year award.
A struggling Sunderland then lured him to Roker Park, as the Northeast Giants struggled on a downwards arc.
The Black Cats slumped to their first ever relegation, and Don moved on to his final playing destination.
At Leeds United, on his playing career, the curtain came down, and as manager he went on to gain international renown.
He took over a Leeds team struggling in football's second division and imbued it with confidence, competence and vision.
Under his inspired leadership, belief grew and spirits soared, and a memorable promotion was his first managerial goal scored.
As a manager, he planned carefully, leaving nothing to chance, meticulously preparing his team for every circumstance.
Under his guidance, Leeds developed a formidable style of play, evolving into an irresistible force that blew opponents away.
His 14 years managerial tenure was the stuff of dreams as Leeds became one of Britain and Europe's super teams.
For services to football with the OBE, he was rewarded, and a hat-trick of Manager of the Year trophies awarded.
At the height of his success, the Football Association came to call and persuaded him to make his most fateful move of all.
He was installed as England boss by the luminaries of Ashton Gate, but with England, his Leeds success, he struggled to replicate.
After 3 years, he made the disappointing decision to throw in his hand and abdicated to the United Emirates, land of sun and sand.
For 3 years, he was the Emirates football emir, a trailblazing pioneer, providing football guidance and techniques clear.
For a further 5 years, he adopted a nomadic coaching role, enabling grateful Arab clubs to achieve their football goal.
In the Middle East, he laid football foundations that are evident today. And sadly, never again did he coach or manage in the UK.
For this great footballing don, there was to be no extra time, as motor neurone disease claimed his life in 1989.
Don Reevey, a borough born and raised... Don Reevey, a boy born and raised in Middlesbrough's Bell Street, who grew up to have the football world at his feet.
Yeah, I think I need to lie down after that, basically. I mean, it's just so epic, it's unbelievable, still. Anyway, Sean, what did you make of Jimmy Flynn's latest offering?
I thought it was really, really good and really insightful. But what really stuck with me, and it's I probably got my older brother to blame for this, is the irresistible force line. I thought that was quite apt, really. My brother is a big Leeds fan, and he tried his best to impart all that sort of Don Reevey 70s Leeds knowledge upon me and hope I'd support them. It was never going to happen. But I do remember them being quite fearsome, such from what I've been shown, a tough team, your Peter Lorimers and your Billy Bremners and players like that, a real force to be reckoned with. But yeah, I thought that was a great piece.
Yeah, Norman Bites Your Legs Hunter, basically. Wouldn't really have lasted too long in the modern game, I suspect, but then again, it's just an observation. Thomas, do you ever get the chance to actually watch the big match live and see some of these particular legends of the game?
You'd probably expect the answer to that question to be no, probably, wouldn't you? But the answer is yes. I do like to watch those big match revisited programmes on ITV4. But yeah, I mean, you know, that ITV interview when Revy's on and Clough's on is like one of the best bits of TV in history. It's just so tense and so interesting. But yeah, I mean, the fact that you've got these two guys that grew up so close to each other, that have ended up being so sort of significant in the history of football, let alone, you know, football in the 1970s, is really incredible. And it was a very fitting dedication to him there, I thought.
Chris, happy 35th birthday. Fly me to the moon. You have the centre spread. You have the genius line of that with the opening line on November 26th, 1988. Borough got beat 1-0 against Sheffield Wednesday in a Division 1 game. Not a remarkable game by any stretch of the imagination on that beautiful hallowed Ayresome Park turf, but it's what happened on the streets surrounding the ground that set tongues a-wagging. Talk to us. Were you there? Did you recognise that whole moment? I mean, I think I've shared in the past, there's not a Fly Me to the Moon reference, but the amazing experience I actually had when I first saw the Ayresome Park pitch in 1974, realising that it was in colour, because since then I just saw the stuff on black and white. It was amazing. Chelsea was the first team I saw play there. It was a 1-1 draw. Anyway, Chris.
Yeah, I was there that day, and it was quite an indifferent game, but I do. Now, I think I didn't get the fanzine that day. I think it was probably already sold out before I, obviously I've got everyone since, but I think it had already sold out before I arrived at the ground. But obviously there's a lot of interest in, that, you know, Middlesbrough producing their own fanzine. So, yeah, and I think no one could have ever envisaged that, we're back in 1988, that 640 copies on in 2023, it's still very much alive, and it's been through lots of different circumstances, the pandemic a few years ago, but we're still hanging in there as a veteran writer.
I mean, Rob, obviously you again have been a fulcrum, foundation, the dare I say it, Stuart Boehm and Willie Madren combined of Fly Me to the Moon from that point of view. Add on, obviously, Gary Pallister and Tony Mowbray for more contemporary references and so on. Is this something, I mean, the term labour of love springs to mind. Is that something which you obviously want to bring? Because, I mean, it's not just a case of, obviously, a Borough-biased fanzine, but it's also a very informed, insightful fanzine with lots of people, obviously, like our team co-presenters today, but also others who've gone on to actually have some really significant careers as journalists as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think Chris mentioned a few people, that Daniel Gray, who's a really good writer now, and he cut his teeth on Fly Me to the Moon. He's had few award-winning books. Bob Fisher, of course, he started on Fly Me to the Moon, and he was a broadcaster of BBC Tees for many years. He's written his own book. He's now a compere at some of the events at the Globe and things like that. So there've been many people it's formed a real role for many people, but for people like Chris and me, we just sort of it's not like a stepping stone. We just do it, don't we? We just you know. I guess I kind of picked up the baton. I think Steve Gibson sometimes says he's a custodian at Borough, and you know, I suppose I was in a way, because it was about 4 years after it started that I became editor, something like that. And you feel like you've got to continue it. And there's been a few times when we thought we were going to have to finish, because basically I was competing against myself with a website, and everybody wanted to do what the people, that was the way people wanted to sort of talk on message boards. But there's probably, I think that the actual printed fanzine will probably outlast that now. It's kind of, I was going to say a second wave, but it's probably a third or fourth wave. And fanzines have become pretty popular again in all sorts of ways, for people, for literature, for artists. There's a lot of people do fanzines. Just they talk about their own day, just like the different things that they do through the day. And a fanzine is quite a sort of good medium for all these things. And I think there's a real reaction, isn't it? People actually like something that you can actually physically touch, and it's become part. It's obviously become part of people's matchday experience. Fortunately, that they want the fanzine on the way to the match. And I often used to do a bit of a trade after the game for the amount of people. It's designed, obviously, as A5 to fit in your pocket. And I did a bit of a trade after the matches where people would say that they dropped it out of the pocket, out the back pocket. They'd forgotten it was there, and then they would ask me, "Oh, have you still got any of them left after the match?" But it's been a lot of years. There's a lot of late nights in all that, And there's been a lot of Thursday afternoons where Chris and Thomas have come round and we've put them all in the envelopes and put the stamps on them and stuck them in the post.
Well, I want to talk to Thomas about two or three things from that point of view. First of all, obviously, using snail mail. I mean, do you often sort of say, Rob, what is this post that you actually speak about? I know not what you're talking about. But I mean, what drew you to the fancy? Was it a case of parental pressure?
Definitely not, no. I think, to be honest, from the first time that I was going to watch matches at the Riverside, really the fanzine was a natural part of that. My brother sold them at that time. So it's very much a family affair through time. But also, I guess, seeing Rob and seeing the other sellers, I always associated the fanzine strongly with that match day experience. And I guess really, I mean, you know, writing for the fanzine was the first bit of proper writing I'd ever done. I don't really like to read too many of those really ones. I don't think so many of them hold up. But you know, it's been nice to have that experience to sort of develop a bit of a writing style and write about, and just like, you know, like Rob says, it doesn't have to be stepping stones. It's just about expressing our opinions about football and about the club. And I think it's an important aspect of our voice as fans. You know, we've seen this week obviously about the announcement that the government are going to go ahead with the governing body for football. But really, I think that fanzines and you know, when Saturday comes and other things like that have been a really important voice to fans, no matter what government has been in charge, no matter what people's opinions of football fans or anything like that have been. Fanzines and that movement has been a really important stalwart through whatever's been going on.
Excellent. I think we got most of that. We've already got in and out slightly, but all's been well. So the challenges of obviously sharing a laptop or a device to actually connect from that point of view. We're actually connecting Middlesbrough and Lincoln for the benefit of the completist who actually wants to know where these folk are. But I want to actually just also, Thomas, before we start talking ahead to Leicester City, draw attention to what we're talking about in terms of writing and your article, which features your good self reflecting on a particularly personal story. And you conclude, we all talk in abstract terms about the spirit of the cup, but rarely is it made human. In a story like mine, I feel it is. We mentioned earlier about obviously the FA Cup first round. We're heading to the FA Cup second round. Would you like to just share with us again, just as we continue, the FA Cup and indeed why we remember? Because it's also particularly significant given that we are literally hours away from Remembrance Sunday.
Yes, so my great-granddad was the captain of Southbank St Peter's, who got to the first round of the FA Cup. Which was a very momentous achievement at the time and also comparatively since. Really, I just wanted to throw the context of this year's FA Cup because the Whitby, who was a former team of my great-grandfather, there was also Cray Valley Paper Mills, who you mentioned earlier on. My great-granddad also played for a paper mills team in the Kent County League as well. So that's two coincidences to this anniversary. But yeah, I just wanted to reflect on that. And I think that the cup competition's come in for a lot of criticism. But I think they're important and also why they're worth protecting in a time where obviously the rush is with money, the rush is with, you know, interest in the Middle East and things like that. But it's important to protect these tournaments with community value, as I think also Ramsgate Red reflects in his article this edition as well, talking about Ramsgate's run. So I think it was an important thing to reflect on.
And rightly so, and it's a fine piece as well. If you want to actually find out more, buy the fanzine. It's quite simple. You know, you just shell out £1.50. It's not going to break the bank, honestly. And it could be an investment. Basically, that's the key thing, Rob. These should be seen as investments of the future. Buy two, one to actually keep for special and one to actually read. Just saying. Sean, let's move back to yourself, if we may, and let's talk Leicester City. At one stage, and maybe even now, some would actually say over the hills and far, far, far away, but they can be beaten. Who knows what could happen? I mean, this is really one of those areas where I suppose you could argue if Borough really want to actually have any hope of becoming of getting automatic promotion, and I dare mention that as opposed to playoffs, it really would require a good result here. I mean, are you traveling hopefully for this one? Are you optimistic? What are the thoughts?
I am optimistic. I think on, you know, the optimist in me would suggest that if we turn up and we play to our full potential, we can give anybody a game. I do believe that. And the one thing that we know a Michael Carrick team will do is go to win the game. There won't be any stifling. There won't be any sort of playing for a point or anything. I think we'll go to win. Obviously, with that comes plenty of jeopardy and plenty of danger when you're playing a team of Leicester's calibre. But yeah, I thought you, for a minute there, Alex, I thought you were going to ask me to praise Leeds for bursting their bubble, but it's not going to happen. But they have proved that they're they have proved that they're beatable. So it can go one of two ways. We, you know, Leicester might get a reaction. I'm hoping that's not the case, and I'm hoping they may be going a little bit of a downward spiral and we catch them on the right day. But yeah, I think it'll be an entertaining game. I think there'll be goals in it. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm. I mean, Middlesbrough currently in the position of 11th, 21 points, some 18 points behind Leicester. So, as I say, conceivably quite a lot of catch-up there. But, Rob, and this is significant, only 4 points away from the playoff positions with Preston in sixth place at 25. So, you know, the playoff paradise, Rob, which seemed to be so far away, certainly a few weeks ago, is pretty much back on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a terrible start to the season, appalling. We were all lamenting it on here, but it just shows, doesn't it? You've got to be like, you've got to keep a calm head. We could have, you know, we could have been revisiting that October change of manager again, and that would have just been so appalling. But
I don't know. Yeah. You know, Espirito Santo is now available. He's left his Saudi Arabia league, so you know.
Yeah, yes, that's true. No, I think you know that. I suppose we obviously went on a really good run after all those defeats, that string of defeats. But now we're wondering what comes next. We've been stuttering a bit, but of course we've got another international break next week, so it'll be nice to go into that and have 2 weeks to sort of contemplate a tremendous victory over the top of the table.
Okay, Chris. Your prediction, Middlesbrough versus Leicester City. Again, it's a tale of two cities, because, of course, we have Leicester City on this Saturday, the 11th of November, and then the following Saturday, well, actually, it's not the following Saturday, it's after the international break, so it's on the 25th of November, away to Bristol City.
I think this Saturday I'm going to predict 2-1, and for the Bristol City game, I think we're going to win 2-0.
Well, they don't longer have Nigel Pearson to actually confuse them with strange songs and various other factors. So who knows what could happen with respect to that.
There we are. I think that's a positive sign that Nigel's gone, I think, because I always fear the old people who've always been with Middlesbrough, that's always a bit of a concern.
And Sean?
I'm going to go for a sneaky 2-1 win against Leicester. And I think against Nigel Pearson-less Bristol City, I'm going to go for a big 3-0 win.
Maybe Bristol City might take Nuno Espirito Santo. You know, just saying, probably needs to work. Thomas, what are your thoughts?
I'm afraid I think I'm going to bring the expectations down for the Leicester one and go for a solid 1-1 draw. But I'll make up for it by saying that we'll get a nice win against Bristol City 3-0.
Which pretty much would have been my sort of thoughts. Rob, how are you going to go with this?
We seem to be scoring three goals quite a lot, don't we, lately? So I'm going to go for 3-2 against Leicester. Bristol City, well, we're just saying about keeping your head and keeping calm. I've got no idea why Bristol City have sacked Nigel Pearson, and neither have the fans. But they have got a really good record against us at Ashton Gate. So I'm hoping we can sneak it 2-1.
And, you know, who knows, Wayne Rooney will probably be available shortly as well, given his track record and success there.
Yeah.
So who knows what could happen with respect to that. Rob, in a sense, because we're celebrating 35 years of Fly Me to the Moon, what's been your happiest memory of your time? And obviously it's going to go on. I mean, as Chris said, he's for the next 35 years. So hopefully you're okay for 2058, Rob. You know, just keep on going. And any thoughts in terms of moments which you thought, yeah, that was, I mean, did you prefer Ayresome Park or do you prefer the Riverside? You know, what's your own sort of life in terms of how that's been going?
Yeah, I probably won't have too many memories in 35 years' time, but it's as well to ask me now. Well, my answer to that is I live at Ayresome Park, don't I? So I must have liked the place to have lived here ever since. But there's been some tremendous memories, and I think the fact that we're getting such big crowds at the moment is testimony to the fact that people are really enjoying the football and really enjoying Carrick's teams. And last season, having a striker that scored 28 league goals and having a team that scored more goals than any other Borough team since the early 60s was just amazing. So we don't have to just look back into the cup finals and everything. The good times are still around.
And Sean, what about your memories? Any particular articles which you thought that was perfection? I could almost do no better.
Well, I could say that each week about the esteemed company that I keep. I'm just honoured to be part of the publication, which may sound cliche, but it's the absolute truth. When you read a lot of the articles and when you come on these pods and stuff with you guys, it's really nice to be able to pick your own sort of ideas and your opinions with such like-minded and sort of talented people. So, yeah, very thankful.
Since the last podcast, of course, was published, we've lost Sir Bobby Charlton. We also, as you may have gathered, had a little musical tribute from a band at the end of the very last podcast, because we lost a fairly famous musician who'd been part of Flying Pickets, Rob. Do you want to actually just give a little shout-out to the solo who effectively sort of left us to become the sort of Flying Picket a cappella society or line in the sky, shall we say?
Oh, that's right. Harwood Kay. He was actually on the subs bench, really, because he came into the Flying Pickets subsequently after their number one, and was singer. Well, they were all singers, weren't they? But he was singer with them for 10 years. But he wrote a good few articles for us. Some excellent memories that he shared. One of them was driving away for Christmas with Chris Rea at the wheel, and he said Chris Rea was a maniac driver, and so he remembered that as being a.
If you will drive with trauma. You know, your hand, one hand on the wheel and one hand on an ice cream cone, you know, yeah. What do you expect?
Yeah,
sorry, there are people who get that Chris Rea reference, but you know, maybe not Thomas, an ice cream company that they were basically.
They were
not
indeed.
Too far away from Ayresome Park, actually.
No, across the road from Albert Park, and the Rea's was where Brian Clough met his wife, and also where Brian Clough used to have meetings with Peter Taylor, where they plotted the future of football. So,
and Hartlepool never looked back, did they?
No, exactly. So we've gone back to that Clough and Reeby once again. But yeah, very sad to hear of Harrywood's loss, because he was a terrific character. He ran a rock school in London, and he came to watch Borough last season. He went to base camp and then went to Borough, and he was just full of enthusiasm about going round the Middlesbrough dock and that area. And he just said, it's just changed so much with the college going up. And he just absolutely loved it. He loved the potential of the place. So very sad. And he would be much missed, but well remembered.
Okay, well, let's move to the usual business end of the podcast. How can people actually subscribe to the remaining issues of Fly Me to the Moon and indeed get the seasons up to date so far?
Yeah, if you go to the website, fmttmborough.com, and go to the fanzine shop and click on subscribe, I will endeavour to update it with a price for if you start now. But yeah, please do come and find us and join in. And can I just say that it's such an honour for me, the other way round, really, to have Sean and Thomas and Chris and everyone else.
Well, let's face it, we weren't going to have any Newcastle United fans on this particular special edition, were we?
We weren't indeed, but to have them, to be able to publish them in the fanzine, because the fanzine for me is all about the people that write. And it's amazing that many of us have become friends through the fanzine over the years, and we didn't know each other before often, and so it just shows that, as Sean was saying, we are quite like-minded, and we often like the same sort of values in football and maybe life as well, and that's been one of the great things about doing the fanzine, that it's like you've got all these friends writing, and you got that opportunity for people to sort of expand and expound on their own views. So it's been brilliant to be able to do that over the years.
Rob, we'll be shedding tears before too long. We need to obviously move on to the final closing sequence. So as ever, you need to lead us in this particular thing as we wrap up this particular edition of Fly Me to the Moon podcast, the companion for Leicester City. We will, of course, be back certainly for, I think, Preston North End. We might even do a one from that point of view. I know the next fanzine is due for Ipswich Town, but I think we might try and squeeze in a little look at the Lancashire Hot Pot battle on the 28th. And we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, Rob, over to you, please. Final last seven words.
Well, Alex, would you once again like to count us down from 3 to 1?
3, 2, 1.
Come on, Borough.
Oh, the Borough.
Congratulations on the nomination. I know it's something that you often put to the back in, you know, individual accolades and not team ones, but I guess it is a sign that things are going, that they're on the right track and have picked up in the last kind of 6-7 weeks.
Yeah, it's down to the players, to be honest. I think, you know, obviously, as an award or an accolade, or kind of comes down to me in that regard. But really, it's about what the boys have done on the pitch and what they've done off the pitch in terms of the training and as a squad. You know, we've had a good spell, and something we need to build on. So yeah, it's great, but it probably just shows of what we've done of late and what we're capable of doing moving forward.
It's kind of taken its toll a little bit, hasn't it, in terms of injuries? What's the picture like at the moment? Any progress?
Pretty much the same, to be honest, at this stage. So yeah, as time goes, yeah, as the weeks pass, hopefully the lads will get closer, but at this stage it's we are what we are.
And it doesn't get much tougher in the division, does it, than Leicester at the weekend? I mean, what are your thoughts on how they're performing at the moment? Did you expect that they would come in and have this kind of impact on the division?
I've been hugely impressed with what they've done and how they've done it. It's not easy. I think you can look at it in player individuals, player wise, and as a squad, you know, they're largely a Premier League team, really, and Premier League club. That doesn't mean that it's easy to kind of drop down and put the results together that they have done and play so well. It's credit to them for that. So they're a good team. You know, we know the challenge. It's a big test for us, but it's a good one. You know, it's a terrific football game. Really good for us to kind of do what we're good at, you know, and still try and win the game. And yeah, they're in a good position in the league and the top, and right so for the run they've been on. But you know, we approach it for us and trying to be the best version of us and go into the game trying to win for sure.
And in Enzo Maresca, a new manager's first kind of big job, trying to find his way in management. I mean, what have your impressions been of him so far?
Yeah, it's similar to the last answer, really. It's really impressed. I think sounds straightforward, and it seems almost teams coming down should bounce straight back up if they keep a good part of the squad together and Premier League players and proven Premier League players. But it's not always easy as that, and a new manager, as you say, coming in, I think he's done very well, and you can clearly see how he wants to play, and the coach very, very well. So there's a lot of work that's gone on, and credit to him for that. So yeah, I'm sure, listen, they'll be right up there at the end of the season. If not winning the league, they'll be in the top two, I'd say. And, so, yeah, credit to them for that.
Cheers.
Michael, there are some who kind of say that Leicester have already won the league. I mean, it's too early to say that, surely?
It's the November, isn't it, by my stretch. And yeah, the league's the league for me. I don't pay much attention to the league at this stage of the season. I think it's picking up as many points as you can. And listen, they're in the position of picking up the most points so far, and credit to them for that. So, but in terms of winning the league, no. As I said on the last one there, I believe that they'll be there, right there or thereabouts at the end, without doubt. But there's still a long way to go, yeah.
Not that the players would need any extra motivation, but does that add a bit of extra spice to the game? You know, the fact that, you know, they're up there, they're kind of target to hit.
I think it's just more about the challenge ahead, you know, and we know we're playing against a really good team. So for that, you know, we know we've got to be the best version of us, and we believe that if we do that, we'll do certain things and in a certain way, then we'll have a good chance of winning. But yeah, as players, you know, you want to challenge yourself. You want to play in the best possible games on offer, and certainly the way they play and the size of the club and where they are in the league at the moment, it's a really good challenge for us, and the boys are looking forward to it.
The Championship is a hard league to get out of any year, but is it as hardest this year because of the fact that the three clubs that have come down have just got on with it? You know, sometimes one or two will get on with it, but there's always a third that maybe don't quite have their act together. But this year it seems like all three of them have just taken to the Championship.
Yeah, they've been pretty solid largely, I think. Credit is set to the three clubs. I mean, we played Southampton, and they had a little bit of a sticky patch, and there was questions asked, but I said at the time that, you know, that they're such a strong team and a good manager and a good club that they'd be up there, and they're on the way up there, and Leeds obviously have dealt with it very well and are hitting some really good form. So yeah, it's a tough league. It is always a tough league, but it is a very tough league this year. But credit to those teams for how they've dealt with it and how they've moved on pretty quickly. And yeah, there's still a long way to go. There's still a long way to go for all of us, you know, in the season, especially for us coming into December and January, how busy it is and how much progress you can make quickly, or it can go in a direction, but we're certainly looking up and looking forward to the challenges ahead.
Do you think that gap has got bigger between, you know, teams that have been in the Championship for a little while and teams that are coming down and kind of having to mix it with them?
It's difficult for me to say in some way because I've been here a year now, and I can only kind of judge on what I've experienced myself. It kind of probably depends on year on year of who comes down and what type of club they are, what kind of structure they got, how strong the squad that they're able to keep. So it's difficult to say. You know, we are where we are. I think we're largely quite happy where we are at the moment in terms of the structure, the setup, the strength of the squad we've got, and we're looking up, we're looking to improve. That's all we can do. We can control what we're trying to do, you know.
Just last question. On Monday, it's the funeral of Sir Bobby Charlton. Very sad day. Someone, of course, who you knew very well. I just wonder kind of what your memories of Sir Bobby are and how you reflect on Monday.
Yeah, well, I'll be there. I'm going to go and pay my respects. And he's a huge inspiration to me and to be honest, everyone who's come across him. I think he's an extremely special man. Incredible footballer, of course, and done unbelievable things for Manchester United, for the country, and but certainly for me personally, of the levels of support and the friendship and getting to know him and feeling that. How much he cared for the players when I was a player at Manchester United was unbelievably inspirational. So it's been a sad period of time, you know, and Monday hopefully is tough as it is and as sad as it is, it'll be a celebration of how special Sir Bobby was as a footballer, as a man, and we'll have to celebrate as best as we can because he's an incredible man.
Michael, just on the injury front, you've mentioned there that no change this weekend, but you're with the international break coming up. Are there some of the boys who are potentially a bit closer to, you know, rejoining training?
Not massively close, to be honest, no.
So how long term are we looking on some of them? Like
it depends, really. It's like Riley's got a problem with his foot, so that'll be a period of time, a number of weeks, and everybody else is a little bit further than that.
Right. On Josh, we spoke to Josh after the game at Plymouth, and of course it's, you know, no secret that he was there was plans for him to potentially go to Plymouth on loan in the summer. We spoke to him after the game about that uncertainty and him coming back from injury that he got in pre-season, and, you know, just working as hard as he could to try and convince you. In terms of that period, what did he do specifically in that period that made you think we should keep Josh here?
Just showed what he could do, really. Specifically, just being himself, seeing that he's a real threat. He's a real be a real important part of the squad and the team, really, and then give us something that we didn't maybe have within the group. We want the flexibility, we wanted the variety, and I think he showed what he's capable of, really, and alongside Manu, especially as kind of a two nines and the two strong options up there, it gives us a really good balance.
Yeah, Yeah, and you know, one thing Josh said was that he was thankful to you for keeping him in the team, because obviously he's had that little period where he hasn't perhaps scored as many as he would have liked, and obviously, as you say, Manu's been pushing hard whenever he's had the opportunity as well. I mean, what was it about what Josh was doing without the goals that made you kind of, you know, stick with him?
I don't have to stick with him. I think it's just picking a team from week to week, and obviously having a plan and what goals win your games, of course they do, but I think it's we don't just judge players on what goals they score. Or I think it's there's a lot more than that, really. There'll be times when he's playing, there'll be times when he sits out, whether he's rested or he has a period out, and you know, we've got to manage that. He's still young, Josh, and learning and developing. And we've got good options within the group, and I keep saying that. So it's a constant balance, really. It's a constant balance. But we know what Josh is capable of. We know what how much more he can develop. And then it's up to us to try and help him do that.
Yeah, you talked Leicester up there, but you also spoke about the fact that, you know, you want to do your thing and focus on yourself. How important is that, particularly against one of the better teams in the league, that you're still, you know, impressed upon the players, the importance of, you know, sticking to what they're good at?
Yeah, it's massive. You know, I think that's the belief and the confidence we've got in each other, really. And it's not one game. You know, this game's not going to make or break our season or tell the story of the season by any stretch. So it's what you do over a period of time that does that. And for us, we believe that being consistent and trying to do the things we know that we're good at more often, then that'll give us the best chance. You know, and whether that's against a team near the top or a team that's a little bit further down the league, it doesn't really change how we approach it. Probably that little edge of extra knowing that you're coming up against at the minute is the best team in the league, and you know you've got to be right spot on with your performance, gives you that extra little bit of an edge, and concentration levels need to be spot on. So, but in terms of what we do, yeah, it's hopefully the consistency and the messages and knowing how good the boys can be, that'll benefit us in the long run.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot, and particularly this week with the King's Speech and the government's plans to press forward with the football regulator. There's a lot of talk around parachute payments and, you know, the kind of division that they're causing the Championship. But from Borough's perspective, as a club who don't get parachute payments, I mean, what can a club like Middlesbrough do to bridge that gap and stay competitive?
For me, in terms of the club and payments, and that's not for me to get involved in, really. I'm here to focus on, like, as a team, what can we do? How can I be the best manager, the best coach? What do the players need? In the end, it's about the players. What do they need to be the best they can be? And developing the players we've got is a massive focus, and getting the best out of them and helping them learn. And then obviously adding to the group and making the group as good as we can, whatever the resources are, you know, however much money there is there to spend, there's only so much, and we're only allowed to spend so much as well, and you just got to make the best of it, you know, whether there's other people who are bigger, have more money or less money or whatever it is, that's not really for me to worry about. It's about what's in these walls of the training ground to make the best of it.
Yeah, just lastly from me, there's been a bit of kind of analysis this week, in the week off, on some of the goals you've been conceding, and there's been a lot of, you know, what you might call worldies, like, you know, low expectation goals. We saw two at Exeter, one at Plymouth. Do you simply just look at that and see if actually that's a good goal, or do you have to look at it a bit, you know, more sophisticated than that and look at, you know, how you can avoid those goals?
No goodness, no one you concede is a good goal, trust me. So yeah. Listen, I think we can appreciate the quality of the strikes. I think there's always something that, with every goal that's scored, there's the defending team can always do something about whatever phase of that play that you can affect the goal. So we can't just brush it under the carpet. There's definitely goals where it's gone in, and something you look and you think that wouldn't go in every week. So there's a balance, you know. There's a balance. I think we've done a lot of good things without the ball. I think with defending as a team an awful lot better, with defending our goal in our box an awful lot better, and you know, by the looks of the goals that are going in, we need to stop some shots, but I don't think you can concede throughout the season as many shots from outside the box as we have, and down to the quality of the strikes, really. A lot of the goals is not really it's not a goalkeeping thing. It's not necessarily always can we close down more. Sometimes it is a little bit one of those periods of time, but I can't help but think, right, it can always be a little bit better. We can always do something to improve that.
Cheers.
How much do you think we've learned as a squad from the last couple of weeks? Well, from the last game, the Stoke game, going to Exeter, the character that needed, and then Plymouth, the back and forth in that game.
How much we learnt of the squad?
How much do you think we, as players, do you think how much we learnt from coming through that?
Yeah, hopefully a lot. I think it takes. Sometimes it takes a little setback to move forward. You know, you got to sometimes take one step back to take two or three forward, and that's proven over time a little bit. I think as a week goes and a period of time goes, I think we've had some good results. Three very different games that we've had, and over the last week for sure, and getting the boys all as a group playing and playing some part was really important. Different types of games, you know, and different competitions. So yeah, there's a lot of experience to be gained from it, and we got to keep making the most of all these experiences. Another one on Saturday and coming back after the break and always being better than we were in the last game. Whether it went to plan, whether it didn't go to plan, there's always something we can get better at, and the boys are doing and showing a really good willingness to do that, to be honest, which is really, again, really encouraging.
Yeah, I was going to say that within games we often look as if we adapt and kick on in the second half. So that takes a lot from you, but also from the players to be able to follow a different plan or whatever.
Yeah, to be honest, largely the same plan. I think they're just for spells and games showing that how the level that as players that they're capable of doing and we're capable of doing as a group, which is for me the key message is consistency. You know, with consistency over a season, like I said, to put performances over a period of time, in a long period of time, but also consistency in the game. You know, to see not having that little 5 minutes or that 10 minutes where there's a little bit of a drop off, because when we're near our best or at our best, you know, we can make the game look really good and a lot simpler at times than it is. So consistency is the challenge, but it's great to know that we're striving for consistency, of knowing that we're capable of hitting some heights, some really good heights in performance levels.
And obviously we've got a lot of injuries at the moment, but it must please you that Sammy Silvera and Morgan Rogers, players like them, are really pressing that they're claimed for a starting place.
Yeah, I mean, some of the boys couldn't do really much more than they're doing to try and get in the team, and that's absolutely brilliant, and that's on my toes to kind of manage that and pick the best team and get the balance. But certainly in training and coming off and making an impact, then it's all I can ask for from them. And then it's a case of, yeah, we got Saturday, and it's a big game. Of course it is, it's the next one, but we incredibly kind of busy period in terms of the amount of games we've got coming up, so everyone's going to be playing their part and they're all ready to do that, so which is brilliant. We want to be playing games. I want to be in cup competition still, and we want to be playing two, three games a week. I'm not complaining about that. I just think now is a great time to be a footballer, because you've got a lot of games to play and then you're all playing a part.
Yeah, and finally, just on Saturday it'll be the 35th birthday of the fanzine that I'm editor of. How important do you still think fans are in the game of football?
Fans are the game, you know. We wouldn't be the football club that we are and the game that we are if we didn't have the supporters following us and to Norwich, to Exeter, to Plymouth over the last, whatever it is now, 2.5 weeks. That's it, you know. That's what it's all based on. That's what gives us the enjoyment, the emotion, the passion of the game. All comes from seeing how supporters and the fans support you and what it means to them when you do well. So fantastic 35 years. Happy birthday.